Blog Talk Radio.
Raymond, I don't know what's going on. I can hear. I can hear the music, but I don't have anything on here that tells me I can open the episode. It said that I was coming back in to a show going on. No, I sent her a text to tell her I'd call her at 3:15. What do you want to do? Yes. Okay, are you on?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So now what do you want to do? Because the tape is going to be messed up. Do you want to go ahead and do it, or what do you want to do?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we need to call her. I don't know how to do that without...
Did you call her or text her?
I text her.
Oh, wow.
So I'd call her at 3:15.
Okay. She's gonna be looking for your number.
Well, let me see if I can do this.
What's her number?
Let me see if I can call her. I mean, I don't.
I have another phone. What's her number?
No, I'm gonna text her. I got it.
Okay. having a little technical difficulty. We'll be with you in a moment.
Your audio is really scratchy.
You can hear it?
Yeah, you're really scratchy.
What, somebody talking, it's scratchy?
Right,
so did
now,
you text her?
I did, but you're staticky and it's loud, it's brassy.
So what, should we reschedule then?
I think so.
Okay.
She's gonna come on in a minute. What are you using, a different phone?
No. Okay.
It sounds terrible.
It does. You sound okay. You just saying that. I sound bad though.
Yes, you do. Keep on now. Hi, Miss Tony.
Hi. Yes.
Hi.
How does she sound?
I just only heard a little bit. Miss Tony?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, now, see, you sound... okay, we've been having technical difficulties. I don't know what's going on. Reverend Ray has static on his line. Really bad.
I have static. Let me call back in.
Okay. Miss Tony, please stay on. This rarely happens, but of course, because we want it to go well today, especially, it's being it's out of our control. Let me see if he can get a better call.
Sure, no problem.
Now you sound great. Keep talking. Let me just do a sound check.
Okay.
You sound good. Let's see if we can get the Reverend on here. Okay, Reverend?
Miss Renee, how do I sound now?
Much better, much better. Now,
okay.
Miss Tony is on and she can hear us. What do you want to do? Do you want to start the episode? I don't know what we're going to do with the first 18 minutes.
Let's do the introduction. Let's go with the way. I'm still here. I'm static. Okay.
Okay. All right. Miss Tony, we're going to do an introduction. I'm going to put you on hold.
Okay.
And I'll bring you back up, and I'll let you know when your mic is hot. It's showtime.
Greetings and welcome to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show about disability rights, disability services, and your disability dollar. Your voice and advocate, voice your concerns, voice your opinion. But please let your voice be heard. Our mission is to bring to you the people, the places, and the things that can change your life for the better, which is inclusion into society, which is living more independently in your home and in your community. America, welcome to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, your friendly neighborhood networker. And our motto is, increase your network and you'll increase your net worth. And behind microphone number two is our host with the most, Miss Renee. Again, welcome our listening audience to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. Although I've been blind for more than 55 years, when I was 13 years old, a big firecracker, which we call a cherry bomb, exploded and blinded me in both eyes. But in spite of that, every morning I rise, I feel blessed, highly favored, and I know God is good. good. So, Miss Renee, how are you doing today?
Well, we had a little bit of a rocky start to our show today. Tony Kornheiser says, this job looks easy until everything goes wrong. So, you know, in spite of that, we're carrying on. So,
well, Ms. Renee,
that's where we are, Rev.
Believe me. But, Ms. Renee, don't worry about it, because anything, Murphy's Law, in this 2020 year, it's just indicative. I mean, you know, they said 2020 is perfect sight. Nothing has been perfect about this year, okay? But I'll be remiss, and I know we're a little late into the time, and we're going to bring our guests up in a minute, but I will be remiss because our next show is after Thanksgiving. And I know Thanksgiving is going to look really different this year. So, Ms. Renee, what is it you want to do different that you did not do last 20 years, 30 years, Thanksgiving, with this pandemic,
you know what?
Let me add.
Exactly. I have never missed a Thanksgiving with my family. And so this is going to be very different. And but I'm willing to make the sacrifice this year for future Thanksgiving meals with my family. So it's going to be different. It's going to be different.
All right.
Because when people say it's hard, they don't want to get uncomfortable. I'm willing to be uncomfortable this year to have many more in the future.
Okay. Well, I won't, getting on my soapbox because our time is short. But now, well, not our time, but radio time. So let's hear our line for today.
Well, we usually begin with the adventures of Mr. Ray and Miss Raven, and in the news, the good, the bad, and the ugly news, which affects the disability and senior communities. And then you have us stop and take charge of in your call to action and having us do something. Now, November is American Diabetes Month, and ironically, it falls in the month we Americans celebrate the carbohydrate blowout of the year. And our guest, Tony Pierce, chair of the NAACP Health Committee of Prince George's Branch, is here to talk to us about diabetes.
Well, boy, okay, that's stepping on my toes, so I'll move on. Real quick, you know, we like to do the beginning of the show, The Adventures of Reverend Ray and His German Shepherd, Seeing That Dog, Miss Raven, That Dog of Wonder, brought to you by the Big Bad Wolf Pet Store, which is located in Tacoma Park. Please go to their website, The Big Bad Wolf. That wolf is W-O-Wolf. And .com and check them out. They have top of the line, top of the shelf dog food, cat food, or any kind of food you have. Those little gerbils you have running around in those cages and goldfish and everything. So Miss Penny is the proprietor. She is one of our major sponsors. So please call her at 202-747-3434. That's 202-747-3434, The Big Bad Wolf, W-O-O-F, Wolf, Wolf. Now, because of the pandemic, Mr. Reverend Ray and Miss Raven is not running around the city going to all these meetings and getting into a lot of things, so I do not have a lot of adventures for you until we get out again, but I do have a tip or information real quick. A lot of blind people that was on the list of getting guide dogs, and you know the guide dog schools closed down in March. Some of the dog schools have resumed, so they'll be taking a handful of people of guide dogs, and there are a couple of dogs like Freedom Dogs that bring a dog to you. They have a different model. So you can check them out. There's a couple of us, about 16 guide dog schools, believe it or not, in the United States. And, you know, and they train on average anywhere from 60 to 100 guide dog users a year. And there's over 7 million blind people in the United States. But of that, there's only like 3 or 5% of blind people use guide dogs. Probably more wants to, but the abilities that you need to use, and we'll talk about that later. But anyway, that is brought to you by the BigBadWolf.com. And so please call them, check them out, the BigBadWolf.com pet store. So, Ms. Renee, back over to you and introduce our guest for weekend. Jackie Leeson used to say in the 1960s and on with the show.
Well, you're going to show your age, aren't you? Our guest is Tony Pierce.
Let's go with Miss with all these Tonys. Because when you say Tony, I think of Tony the Tiger, because that's my favorite cereal, Frosted Flakes. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, she's definitely going to want to talk to you. Our guest is Tony Pierce, family nurse practitioner by day and diabetes prevention educator by night. Well, seriously, diabetes is a serious disease, and she's here to educate us. Welcome, Miss Tony.
Thank you,
Tony.
Thank
you.
Thank you for your patience and all, and for being our special guest. And a lot of times, because we have the internet now, and you can almost like just ask, especially if you got Alexa, you can just ask about anything, okay? So you can find out information, tech information, and all that. But what our people like to know a lot of times, our listener audience know something about the person and the person's venture, how they came from where they did. So we don't know, some people was, you know, brought by a stalk, or got out the cabbage pack, or somebody, you know, put them together. So they want to know about that. Where did they come from, and how did they get to where they are now? So if you'd be kind enough to give us a little history about your beginnings and startings, you know, we appreciate it.
Oh.
Where you from, who you from, and how you got from them.
Sure. Thank you so much for that introduction, Reverend Ray, and thank you so much, Ms. Renee, for your introduction. So, yes, so I am a family nurse practitioner. I've been practicing for the past 7 years here in the Washington, D.C. area. So I'm originally from Roanoke, Virginia. I was born and raised there. I moved to, yes, and it's a part of Virginia that I consider the real Virginia. It's not Northern Virginia, what you guys are up here.
Okay. The real love state. Okay.
There you go. It's in the south southwestern portion of the state. And so I moved to this area in 2013 after graduating from grad school. I went to Virginia Commonwealth University, where I obtained a master's of science degree and became a nurse practitioner. So. I'm here. I've always loved the D.C. area. My father is originally from Anacostia, D.C., so I was fairly familiar with this area growing up. Yeah, coming up here for, you know, Thanksgiving, Christmas, holidays, just to visit family. So when I graduated, I decided to move here.
Oh,
wow.
So you have siblings?
Oh, yes. I have three brothers and one sister.
Mm-hmm.
And where are you in that hodgepodge of people? You what
in the I'm the fourth. I'm the second to the youngest. I have a younger brother.
Oh, okay. All right. And what
well,
you,
let me
what
ask
led
you, mentioned.
Go ahead.
You mentioned that you've got you completed your graduate studies. What do you like best about your job as a nurse practitioner?
Oh, yeah. So the main part is that I'm actually able to help people. And as a family nurse practitioner, you do have prescriptive authority. So it's almost like a fusion of nursing practice and medical practice. So medical practice model is something that's most familiar with physicians. So they focus on the disease and the illness. The nursing practice model is more so focused on patient-centered care. So being a family nurse practitioner is a fusion of those two models. So what I like most is that I have the ability to focus and target the illness in what I do, and I also have the nursing background that allows me to focus on the patient. So I like that aspect of what I do.
Wow,
let me ask you this then. Then I won't ask you if you're a spiritual person or not, and do you go to church and all that. That's none of my business right now until to after the show. But
okay.
But now at that. One of my gifts are not mercy, even though I'm a minister. So what led you to wanting to help people? I know you want to help people if you join the NAACP, but well, that's another story. But anyway, so go ahead. What led you to realize that you have a gift of mercy?
A gift of mercy, yes. So, well, I don't mind delving into my spiritual background. So I was raised in the church. I was raised Pentecostal. And yes, I am a Christian, and I believe in the teachings of Jesus. I don't mind stating that. So I think that's probably the genesis of, like, my desire to care for people. And just, you know, growing up Black in the South, you see a lot of, you know, poverty and things that you feel maybe very strongly about. And perhaps as I was growing up, I just knew that, you know, as far as my community, there were things that we needed. And I thought that becoming a nurse practitioner would allow me to, in my own way, provide some of those resources to my community. So the genesis of it is definitely my spiritual background, but I think it just kind of seeing other things growing up made me want to lend a helping hand, so to speak.
Well, one other question, Ms. Renee, before you go, too. So let me ask, so did you have any family, friends that was also in the medical field or doing the type of work that you're doing now?
No, I have a friend who's a family physician. We actually went to college together. She is a family physician. But growing up, no one in my family was a part of the medical field.
That's interesting. Okay. So during the summer or as you was, a teenager, what type of summer jobs you had? I mean, were you working in the in the proverbial McDonald's flipping hamburgers? Hey, you want fries with those? or were you able to work in a position where you help people or serve people? What was your summer jobs like, or in between jobs? As you went to college or whatever.
So it was mainly retail. I was like growing up. Well, once I became of age, like high school age, I knew I did not want to work in fast food. I just did, I was not for the, I know how harsh customers can be in the fast food setting. So I was just not. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. So I worked mainly retail. My first job was at a shoe store. It was called A&N, the letter A, and the letter N. And it was a shoe store. I was making $5.75 an hour.
and she remembers not exactly how much you
we all remember our first pay, right?
Yes, I was making $5.75 an hour. I didn't know any better. I was 14 and a half years old. I was super excited because around that time, my parents were going through like a separation divorce. And so I was just able to, be less of a burden on my mom and kind of make my own money. So I was super excited. And the only reason I remember the pay is because after a year of working there, I got a 5-cent raise. And I was like, you know what, that's it. I feel like I deserve more than a 5-cent raise. And so I left and started working at JCPenney, where I continued to work throughout college.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, let me ask you a question. We've heard your career. That would be enough to spur anybody onto a secondary education. But how did you get involved with the NAACP?
Sure. So, everybody knows
tricked,
about
she was tricked in. She was tricked into it. No, go ahead.
Every Black person I think has an idea of those letters, NAACP. But people may not actually know kind of how the organization started or why the organization was started. So when I moved here from my hometown, Prince George's County is 64.4% African American. And so I was like, oh, they must have a very vibrant, NAACP branch here, because everything that was going on with, the killings of unarmed Black men and just things you would see, you were seeing in the news, I felt that, okay, I need to get involved some sort of way outside of my profession. So I just started, as I Googled and I found, you know, Prince George's County Branch NAACP, and I paid my money, and I just, you know, this was in October of 2019 when I officially joined, and I just started to attend the monthly meetings, and that's, it was really just that simple, just wanting to get involved after seeing everything that was going on in the world, and that's how.
Now, Reverend Ray, since we got a late start, are we doing our regular breaks?
Not regular break, just we'll just bump to a station break. That's all.
Okay, well, while we're going out on station break, I would like for you to, that you're the chair of the NAACP Health Committee, and I want to know, how does your social justice work combine with your vocation as a family nurse practitioner? And you can answer that on the other side of our break.
All right. Welcome, welcome, welcome to our listening audience. This is Sight and Vision Disability Senior Talk Radio Show, and I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and we'll be back with our special guest, Miss Toni Pierce, who's going to talk to us about which a lot of blind people become blind from diabetes. Because this is Observe Diabetes Month. So back on the other side as we bump out.
We want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in Northwest Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium foods, and if your dog needs it, they have it. They have a store-to-door delivery in the DMV. So give them a call at 202-747-3434. That's 202-747-3434. You are listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio, heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And back over to Reverend Radio Ray and our guest, Toni Pierce, family nurse practitioner by day and diabetes prevention educator by night.
And because that name is whatever you call it, boy, man and woman, we have to say Miss Toni Pierce. And you notice our segment that we always do sight and vision. I mean, we always do the good, the bad, the ugly issues that affect persons with disability and seniors. And that is brought to you by Real-Time Pain Relief, the best smelling, most effective real-time pain relief lotion in the world. You just rub it on and the pain is gone. Well, we're going to shorten it with just a good. Good that at least for persons with disabilities and all and underlying medical problems, they hope by December that they will have a vaccine out, and I understand one of the categories that will receive it first are persons with disabilities, seniors, and definitely our first responders. They need it dealing with all these ungrateful, but that's a Casanova show. But anyway, so that's brought to you. So that's the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm just going to do a good, not going to do a bad, not going to do an ugly. Issues that affect persons with disability and seniors. And again, that is brought to you by the Real Time Pain Relief, the best pain relief lotion in the world. You just rub it on and the pain is gone. Ms. Renee, give our formal introduction again to our guest.
Well, again, our guest is Toni Pierce, our family nurse practitioner, is here to talk about diabetes prevention. This is Diabetes Awareness Month. And the question that I asked before the break was, you're chair of the NAACP Health Committee. How does your social justice / civil rights work combine with your vocation as a family nurse practitioner?
Yes, thank you for that. That's such a good question. So in my profession, I do work in an underserved community, and I used to work in with the underserved full time. I now do it on a sort of an as needed basis. But I found that even in attempting to manage, and particularly because I work in D.C., in particular African-American patients, I would find that trying to manage certain illnesses, particularly those of a chronic nature, like diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, those types of illnesses, it was kind of difficult because my patients, even though they were able to afford the medication or they were able to get the medication somehow, their, like, for instance, their diet was always a problem. So I can give you the medication, and we'll just kind of stay on the, use a diabetes example. I can give you a prescription for the insulin. But if you cannot afford the food that will help to maintain a low blood sugar level, then the insulin that I'm giving you is, it's all for naught, or we're going to get into this cycle where I'm having to give you more medication, because your lifestyle is not really helping your disease process. So in that, I realized there's something else that's missing here. People can have access to health care all day long, but if they cannot afford the things, i.e. food, that will kind of help to aid in managing their chronic illnesses, then their access to health care is really negligible. So as it pertains to the African-American patient, we are resource deficient in almost every category. And Dr. Dr. King has a quote that I love, and one of his quotes was, and he stated, "Of all the forms of inequality, injustice in healthcare is the most shocking and inhumane." And he's right, because without your health, you have nothing. You have no quality of life. You have no life. So combining my vocation as a family nurse practitioner with my activism or social justice work only makes sense, because we have to be healthy people. We have to be able to care for ourselves in order to thrive and survive in every sphere.
Okay, Mr. Nye,
you speak that so well. Go ahead, Reverend.
Yeah, I have a question, because you know, when I was doing my good, bad, and ugly, my bad was going to be this: is that people with disability and seniors are struggling with juggling housing, medicine, and food, and you know, and I say that because some people, because of the way the prices are going up with food, they're juggling. You know, maybe they can't pay their housing right now, but because they have to buy more food, food prices are higher, and their medication is so expensive. So what you just said. And what they're cheating on is food, of course. You know, they're buying cheap stuff, cheap stuff. And so is it educating the black community? I know it's a couple of things here. One is being able to get the money. And if you're on fixed income, and right now with the job situation where, you know, you just ain't being able to buy high-quality food. But is it a lack of education? Or what? I mean, if you have to look at something, and now one thing Renee, a mother, was good about, that she would buy something quality, to have one quality thing than to have seven or eight, you know, cheap things. So in your observation, as you look, is it a lack of education or what? I mean, because they always say black people is number one in everything bad, you know, high blood pressure, diabetes, you know. So what is it? And I keep on hearing food. It's so important. You know, food is so important. That's real medicine. So what is it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's all of that, to be honest with you. So when I say that the African-American population, and I'm speaking just generally speaking, of course, but we're resource deficient. That's educationally, that's, you know, when it comes to food resources, when it comes to money, all of those resources we are deficient in. So, for instance, even if you have the money to purchase healthier food items, and we know that healthier food costs more money, if you don't know what to purchase, then you're still not going to help yourself. You see what I mean? And even if you have the education, so say that you do know what to purchase when you go into a grocery store, but if you don't have the money to purchase, then you're still not going to be able to help yourself. So I think all of that, you have to have the education, you have to have the money to be able to afford these healthier food items, and you have to have the resources, meaning you have to have the ability to access the healthcare system. Because even if you're healthy, or quote-unquote healthy, let me just say healthy in air quotes, sometimes that's not enough because, for instance, diabetes does have a genetic component, meaning it's something that you can you can be genetically predisposed to. So even those individuals who appear healthy, meaning they have a normal weight, they eat you know, the foods that are healthier for you, they exercise, they can still develop diabetes if they have a genetic disposition. So in that regard, you still have to have access to the healthcare system. So I think it's a lack of education as it pertains to African Americans. It may also be a lack of financial resources, a lack of access to healthier food items, as well as a lack of an inability to access the healthcare system.
I have a question. Okay. You know, often.
Go ahead.
Oftentimes, when a person who is providing health care, whether it's a doctor or a nurse practitioner, does not relate to the patient in terms of cultural norms, that's what I hear a lot from people, is that I can't eat the way they want me to eat. Healthy eating, do cultural eating patterns have to be discarded totally?
Not necessarily, and I'm from the South. So that diet in and of itself, I mean, I'm talking macaroni and cheese, sweet potato pies, you know, all the good stuff, anything pork.
Yeah, chitlins, all that good stuff.
All that good stuff. You don't have to completely disregard it, but you may have to modify some recipes. And your grandmother may not like it, but you can still enjoy those types of foods. You can still enjoy those cultural foods, but you may have to modify them, and you may have to substitute some things. And obviously, moderation would be helpful as well. But no, you don't have to completely disregard your cultural diet. You just have to have the ability to modify the foods that you like and that you love that are a part of your culture.
Okay, so we hear a lot about prediabetes. What is prediabetes, and does it always lead to diabetes?
Mm-hmm. So it can lead to diabetes, but you can also, even patients who are prediabetic, they can become, and I don't want to use the word non-diabetic, but you can get the blood sugar level down to a normal range, which is out of the pre-diabetic and diabetic range. So pre-diabetes is where your blood sugar is not high enough to qualify for diabetes, and I'm speaking type 2, okay, because that is the most common form of diabetes. And it's the one that we are most affected by as African Americans. So prediabetes is in between normal and diabetes. That means your blood sugar is elevated, but it's not elevated enough to qualify for a full diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. So you're in between. Basically, you have work to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you this while along that line. This, like, I think just about every black person in the world take metformin. You know, so what does metformin actually do to your blood, and can you stop taking it somewhere along the line if you, or once it in your system is something that you just have to keep taking? So those are a couple of questions. So what is it, what it does to you, and is it, can you ever get off of it, or you just stuck with it for the rest of your life?
No. So the reason, that's so funny, that's so true, because metformin is often kind of the first oral medication that we place patients on, and it just helps the body to absorb the sugar more easily. And we put people on it because it's cheaper, to be quite honest with you. So the first step in managing type 2 diabetes is always lifestyle changes. So we try the diet and the exercise thing first, right? And we'll trial a patient on that for a short period of time, maybe 3 to 6 months. And if we see that, you know, the weight is coming down and the blood sugar is beginning to normalize, then we'll just kind of continue to monitor the blood sugar levels with the diet and exercise. But if we notice that we've implemented the diet and exercise, plan, but the blood sugar is still not normalizing, the first agent that we typically use, especially in the underserved populations, is metformin because it is cheaper. And it just it allows the body to use the sugar, your sugar easily. Sugar is almost like fuel for the body. But what happens in patients who have type 2 diabetes is that sugar accumulates in the bloodstream and it doesn't get into the cells where it can be used properly. So it's just kind of hanging out in the blood, which can obviously send the blood sugar sky high and can cause other complications. So the goal of diabetes treatment is to get that blood, that sugar from the bloodstream into your cells to be used.
Oh,
so
because I was in a racial mixed group, and we was choosing teams. And one of the things that the instructor said, okay, y'all come up with a word that y'all all can remember. And most of my team was black. I said metformin. Some of us took it. I know we remember that word. But anyway, Miss Renee, go ahead. What's your next question for Renee?
Who can come after that? we need to do a station identification, and you are listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio, heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And back over to our host and our guest. Our host is Reverend Ray Razor. Lifestyle, diet, small, simple changes. Our guest, Tony Pierce, chair of the NAACP Health Committee of the Prince George's Branch, is here to talk to us about what we can do to change our diabetes outcomes.
And welcome back to Sight and Vision Disability Senior Talk Radio Show. Ms. Tony, let me ask you this. Black people advocating to their officials, and that can be the city council, that can be the county council, whatever. Are we advocating for, I won't say the wrong thing, but in terms of looking at our list of priorities and health? I mean, we just say health, and I think a lot of times we say, well, I want better health, and I think a lot of times we don't even know what that means. But are we advocating for the top two or three should be in terms of food? Right now they keep calling it food insecurity because people are not getting it, but not just food insecurity, but understanding health health. I mean, like, we don't have – I see a lot of the other races have these gardens, you know, that they're growing just about any place, you know. I see the Muslims do that, but overall, in terms of African-American community, are we missing it on not educating ourselves or being part of these garden clubs or whatever?
I think so.
Go ahead,
Reverend.
Please.
Sure.
Nancy, go ahead. If you can answer that.
Absolutely. So I think in terms of our political priority as African-American group, I think the first thing you have to start with is advocating for economic resources. Because you can have all the education in the world, but if you don't have the money to do certain things, particularly in this country, because this is a capitalistic country that we live in. So if you don't have money to access certain things, then all of your education is null and void. So I think in terms of what we need to advocate for first is for economic resources, because that will then allow us, and it would open us up to a world of other things, like, you know, healthy food items, like access to certain education resources like accessing the healthcare system. So I think that should be the first. If we're going to be politically minded, that has to be the first. The health piece is important, but if, again, if you can't access certain things that will allow you to be a more healthy person, then having the knowledge and the education and being a part of a garden club, it's all for naught.
No need to be part of a garden club if you can't afford the seeds.
There you go. I like that metaphor. Exactly.
Let me ask you something. Now, you know, people oftentimes say, obesity runs in families, or diabetes. You did mention that if there's a predisposition in families. But a lot of times obesity runs in families because of eating habits and eating patterns. How can we interrupt that pattern with younger people?
Ooh. You know, that's a really good question. And a lot of it, too, is cultural as well. And so if your grandmother or your grandfather cooked a certain way, that was passed on to your mother or father, which was then passed on to you, which you are more likely passing on to your children as well. So I think, how do you interrupt that? Well, first you have to be able to expose your children to different types of food. I think that is the way, because if you're used to eating a certain way, or you're accustomed to eating a certain way, fried chicken, and we'll just stick with the African-American diet, for instance, fried chicken and sweet potato pie and yams and all these types of things, and that's what you expose your children to, well, that's what they're going to like, or that's what they're going to want. But if you have the resources to introduce different types of vegetables into your children's diet, introduce different types of protein, introduce different types of fruits and things of that nature, then I think that would be a start in interrupting those unhealthy eating patterns. And so I think to answer the question, it's just exposing your kids to different types of foods early on in life.
You know, my grandchildren attend a school, and they introduce them, it's a multicultural school, and they introduce them to lots of different kinds of food. And one of the things that they use, and I really love this idea, they talk to everybody about, don't yuck my yum. In other words, if there's something that I've been served that's different, rather than somebody leaning over and go, oh, that's yuck, don't yuck my yum. Let me try it. Let me decide if I like it. And then, we go on from that. But that's a part of the mental, the 180 turn that we have to make. And parents have to be willing to for them to try it, as well as to introduce them to their children. Because we had a foreshortened show because of our technical difficulties, I want to get to the diabetes prevention program and the diabetic plate method. Can you talk a little bit about that? We're coming up on the carbohydrate blowout of the year, It may not be practiced that day, but we're going to have leftovers until Sunday. But what in outside of this holiday, what should our plate look like so that we can begin to make the small, simple changes that we need to prevent or to control our diabetes?
Absolutely. So I think just in general, a good rule of thumb that I always like to advocate for, and a good resource is the www.choosemyplate.org. And on there, kind of gives you a picture of a plate and what exactly should be on the plate, right? So you have a serving of whole grains, you have a serving of vegetables, and you have a protein serving. And it gives you kind of the portion size and what that would look like. So I think just to keep it simple, you should have on your plate the size of the fist that should be your protein, like your meat serving. Should have the size of a fist to be greens, and the other third should be a whole grain.
Whoa, now, the beverage wait a minute. Now, what kind of plate are you using? Because the plate I have six different. But anyway, go ahead.
situation look like.
Really? Now, in terms of, you know, I always hear people say, don't drink before your meal, or don't, or drink during the meal, or drink after the meal. So, what is the practice on that in drinking?
Sure. So,
I mean,
yeah. So the method that I always tell patients, particularly if weight loss is the issue. Now, if you're trying to lose weight, then your diet is going to look a certain way. And in terms of the drinking, if the goal is to lose weight, then I advise patients to drink after the meal. And you have to also be mindful of what you're drinking. And I think that's the key as well. Obviously, water is the essence of life. It helps in digestion as well as other bodily functions. But water is always just the best thing to consume in terms of beverage. I definitely advise patients to stay away from soft drinks. Some patients, you know, they have a propensity for Pepsi or cola. So if you can get the zero calorie or the diet soft drinks, if that's something that you prefer, you can buy those little flavor packets and put them in water. If you don't like the taste of just plain water, you can always, you know, buy the little Crystal Light packets or whatever, and you can put them in your water. Yeah.
But Miss Tony, I thought things go better with Coke.
Miss Tony,
yes,
I'm going to
yes,
pull you in.
Okay,
you know,
well,
we're at the end of our show, and I do want to ask you, do you have a favorite story from your work life that you can share with us, a success story maybe around the issue of diabetes?
A success story around the issue of diabetes. I mean, I can't think of one in particular, but I've had several patients, particularly when I worked in the primary care setting, where the patients came to me with an elevated blood sugar. They were symptomatic, and I put them on medication, put them on a diet and exercise plan, and after about a year, I was able to normalize the issue. I have plenty of those stories, and I was able to get their blood sugar reading back to normal. Yeah, but you have to be dedicated and consistent. So I have plenty of those stories, but not one in particular.
But that's important, and I'm glad that you used the term a year, because we put the weight on gradually. We want to take it off instantly. I'm guilty of that. So, you know, it's good to hear over a period of a year. But, Reverend Gray, I'm going to let you close us out.
Okay. Well, Tony, I just want to ask you, we appreciate you for being on the show, and our show posted on our website, Disability Number One Radio.com. So this will be posted. But real quick, we always get different answers from this question. How much water should you drink a day?
So the recommended amount of water to drink in a day is 64 ounces. So that's eight ounce glasses of water a day. And that's essentially 2 liters. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Thanksgiving coming up. And what little nugget would you like to leave us with? Because it looks like I got to change my plate. But anyway, what little nugget you would like to leave us with for Thanksgiving going into the holiday?
Yeah, so I'm very simple. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. You know, with the coronavirus out now, definitely be safe. If you can, keep it just amongst your immediate family members, you know, but enjoy. I never have any restriction for holidays. That's a time for family and fun and celebration. So enjoy your Thanksgiving. Enjoy your Christmas holiday. But all the other days of the year, try to be mindful of what you're eating and doing.
All right. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Thank you for being our special guest. All righty. Okay.
And thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So, all righty. So, people, enjoy your Thanksgiving. But like Ms. Renee said, all of that food that y'all going to have stacked in your refrigerator. No, y'all got to be careful with that. The macaroni and cheese. We have our daughter-in-law, Miss Adrian, fix a dynamite macaroni and cheese. I don't know if she used 7, 8 different cheeses or whatever right there. That just makes my heart want to pop a tank and grab my my metformin. But anyway, have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving, and we will be back. So this is my time is up. I thank you for your time, and this is Reverend Ray, and I'd like to say I might not have sight, but I can have vision, vision, vision. God bless and be blessed.
You have been listening to Sight and Vision, Disability, and Senior Talk Radio. Have an idea for a show? Contact us in all the usual ways. Email us at snvradioshow@gmail.com. That's the letter F, N, V as in Victor, radioshow@gmail.com. Or call us at 301-377-6468. Want to listen to a past show? Check us out at disability1radio.com. That's disability1, the number one, radio.com. Go to the address bar, not the search engine. Once again, that completes our show, and we want to thank our special guest, Toni Pierce. November is American Diabetes Month, and she said you could eat on Thanksgiving Day, but Thanksgiving is one day. Don't continue to eat. See you here next week for new information on information that affects the seniors and the disability community. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.